Okay, looks like this is gonna be half a talk, but I guess good enough. It's a little hard, actually, to hit a home run when you're batting ninth in the day, but I'll try to at least get on base here. What I'm gonna try to do is to make something happen. Okay, is to tell you about what I think is a very nice experimental system for studying all sorts of pattern formation, and mostly show you some nice experimental movies, and then suggest a couple of ways of thinking about this system in somewhat simpler ways that also lead to a whole variety of pattern formation phenomena, and maybe will suggest things that might be relevant to biology or physics or whatever. I guess we want to go this way. Those are some references, but I guess it'll all be up on the web, so we don't have to worry about that. I don't know that I have to say much about the BZ reaction, other than it's sort of the hydrogen atom or the Drosophila of reaction diffusion systems. I should mention that one of the people who has helped us with this work is Anatol Jabotinsky, who we've been collaborating with for a number of years. The system is the BZ-AOT system. So the BZ reaction typically runs in aqueous solution, or actually, to be honest, in one molar sulfuric acid solution, which makes it a little bit less suitable than you might think for children's toys and things like that. What we're going to do is to run it in a microemulsion, which is a mixture of water, oil, in this case octane, and a surfactant that is known as aerosol OT for reasons that are obscure to me, but which has a polar head group and a nonpolar tail, so that the polar end wants to sit in the water and the nonpolar tails want to sit in the oil. So we form micelles, which are essentially little droplets, and when I say little, I mean nanometer diameter droplets of water surrounded by a monolayer of surfactant swimming in a sea of oil. And one can actually tune the size of the droplets by varying the water to AOT ratio. Typically, one works with droplets that have radii of the order of a few nanometers. We do these experiments in what is essentially a petri dish. There are about 10 to the 17 of these little droplets in the petri dish. So you can think of this as 10 to the 17 little reactors or little compartments of rays that are communicating to some extent, and I'll say something about that, by diffusion through the oil. Now the BZ reactants are all quite polar and are largely confined to the water droplets. However, in the process of the reaction, there are some intermediates generated, in particular bromine dioxide and bromine, that are nonpolar and get out into the oil and provide one means of communication between droplets. There's another means of communication, which is that these droplets, unlike rays, are not fixed in space. They move around, they diffuse. The two mechanisms of communication have rather different time scales, because the nonpolar droplets in the oil are small molecules, and they move with typical rates of small molecules. They have diffusion constants on the order of 10 to the minus 5th centimeters squared per second. The water droplets, when they move, although they're very small, they have 10,000 or so molecules, and so they move a couple of orders of magnitude slower. So we have a sort of fast diffusion mechanism and a slow diffusion mechanism in the system. I keep going the wrong way. Okay, this is just some experimental data showing this significant difference in diffusion constants, and that difference depends somewhat on the ratio of oil to water in the system. Okay, another thing that will become relevant, if one does light scattering experiments, one can measure the distribution of droplet sizes. And these are two measurements, this one done at about 4 hours after mixing up the microemulsion, and the solid dots were done on a microemulsion that was about a day old. What you see is that the fresh microemulsions have a bimodal distribution. They have little droplets and they have big droplets, and as the microemulsion ripens, matures, it becomes unimodal, and to people who work with these things, nearly monodisperse. That's, I think, being a little kind. Yeah. Yep.
That's the nearly.
But that way we can talk about the average size 5 nanometer droplet or whatever. Okay, the experimental setup is basically a couple of pieces of glass, a gasket that goes between them. So essentially we have a covered petri dish in the middle here where the microemulsion sits, and we look through it with a microscope. We have a camera. It's about a tenth of a millimeter thick. And don't do that. Okay, and this is a sort of summary of what I'm going to show you. There are two experimental parameters that we vary. We vary the ratio of oil to water, which changes the density of droplets in the microemulsion, and we vary the ratio of bromate to malonic acid, which changes this parameter, which I've crudely called chemistry, the ratio of activation to inhibition in the system.
I'm confused.
Yeah.
You had this RW and RD.
Yeah.
These droplets have the BZ inside them.
Yes. Yeah, the difference between RW and RD is essentially the tails sticking out. So the thickness of the surfactant layer around it.
But then you also have some other kinds of droplets besides these?
No. I've got oil, and then in the oil, I've got droplets surrounded by monolayers.
For the
BZ reaction, yes. Yeah, I've got a whole bunch of little BZ reactors diffusing around, sending out stuff that diffuses faster through the oil.
The chemicals.
Yeah. Okay, now, we see, as we vary these parameters, we see various kinds of patterns, and the most common which is seen in the aqueous BZ reaction, are the relatively familiar spirals. This reaction is catalyzed by ferroin, which is a redox indicator, so you're seeing essentially red on blue there. But
what is the spatial scale of one of these droplets?
The droplets are 5 nanometer diameter. The spacing here is a couple hundred microns. So you're seeing a lot of droplets. Not with our technology. and probably, well, there is a fluorescent catalyst that we have begun to use that might give some. From here to here?
No, between the droplets.
Oh, the average distance between, yeah. In this case, the average distance is, I don't know, 4 or 5 droplet diameters. But we vary.
What's the volume fraction?
The volume fraction here is on the order of 30%, something like that. We go from about 20 to 80%.
So the light line or spaghetti,
yeah,
is made up of many water droplets.
Many, yes.
Many of these little reactors.
Yep. Okay. In addition to the spiral, the normal spiral that I just showed you, we see anti-spirals. That is, notice now the spirals are moving in rather than out from the center. This says one arm. We also see spirals with two arms. People who work with the Bézier reaction expect spirals to move outward from the center and expect that when two spirals come together, or two waves come together, they annihilate one another. That doesn't necessarily happen in this system.
Well, isn't there an annihilation in the sense when you come, if it spirals in, it gets...
In the center, there's a sink in effect now, yeah. But if I have two of these thing, well, I'll show you other waves that where you'll see they don't annihilate. We also get target patterns, these circular waves, which also rather strikingly move in toward the center. It's like dropping a stone in a pool and having the waves move in instead of out. Again, somewhat, if you've done these experiments, somewhat counterintuitive.
So how big is your sample? It's like a millimeter or something.
The thickness?
Yeah.
A tenth.
So is this like focal, or are you averaging the whole system?
It's not a confocal microscope. I mean, it is averaging, but there seems to be a sort of mono. Yeah, I mean, one would think there. Yeah, but I mean, we must be looking at a single layer because otherwise, you know, you've either got to believe that there are cylinders here or that somehow everything's going on in a single.
What's the length scale again?
Okay. Well, from here to here is a couple hundred microns.
Well, small.
Yeah. Very. Yeah. I mean, they're these patterns are more on the scale of the.
It's about the same. So the distance is about the thickness of the system.
Yeah. Okay, we also, this was the original motivation, and I won't show you movies of these because Turing structures don't move. This was the original motivation for working with this system. You can't get Turing patterns in the aqueous Bézier reaction because to get Turing patterns you need a significant difference in diffusion rates between the activator and the inhibitor, and these are all small molecules. So the trick here is that we now have these two diffusion scales. Because we have the diffusion of the polar species within whole droplets, which is slow, and then we have the diffusion of the nonpolar species outside through the oil, which is fast. And that buys us various kinds of Turing patterns. This one, John asked about the annihilation. This is, watch this spot, and okay, here we go. Now watch as these waves come in here. They're going to speed up as they approach, and then they're going to bounce off at right angles, which is not what happens in the ordinary Bézier reaction. So again, they come together, they speed up, they collide, and then they go off at right angles.
Have you tried writing equations for this stuff?
We have a model that also behaves this way, but we don't have an intuition
but
for...
Aren't the surface effects dominant here?
Well, there aren't any surface effects in our model, and it behaves the same way. But no, I.
If I see two things colliding and bouncing apart, it's a surface repulsive effect.
Well, what's the surface?
The surface. You mean of the spaghetti in the oil?
No. No, it's a different length scale.
Spaghetti being made up of thousands of water droplets.
Not here. I mean, if you put more water in, you get to a point where there's actually a percolation phenomenon, and the droplets form long channels, and the conductivity goes up by a factor of 1,000. But we're well below there. Yeah. I mean, it's a well mixed system on any macroscopic scale, it's uniform, yeah.
No, but between the white and the black. You mean.
Oh, yeah. 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 Well, in the droplets, which are everywhere.
But only the white in the droplets.
No. The white is not oil and water. The white is ferroin ferrien. It's oxidized, reduced.
Droplets everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. This is millions and millions of droplets.
It doesn't matter. The white, the interface between the white and black, you still have the vector surface energy. And when there's the move around,
the difference between the white and the black is not concentration of oil or water. It's concentration of stuff in the water droplets. But yeah, no, there's an interface of some sort.
Can you look at the density of the droplet? You mentioned interaction between the droplets.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the density of the droplets, are they more accumulated in a specific region?
We don't have any way of measuring the density, a spatially resolved density of droplets on that kind of stuff. Pressure? I think this, in some sense, is no different from the B. You don't ask that question about the spirals in the BZ reaction. Yeah, but they. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm just trying to. I'm just trying to show you some provocative movies. Okay. All right. This one we also get chaotic-looking stuff. Although up here, why didn't that move? There we go. Okay. Up here we've got what look like plane waves, and down here we've got this spatio-temporal. Chaotic looking stuff. There may be some inhomogeneity across the system because this is, up here we're closer to the boundary. Yes?
It kind of looks irregular in space but not in time. If you focus on a single spot in time,
mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Louder? No, that is not the whole domain. That is one little piece. Okay, this is actually just a still, but I'll show you a movie in a minute. Imagine these moving from, I can't remember, right to left or left to right, but these are plane waves with little breaks in them. And every once in a while, one of them will break off another little
row. Now what's this
row.
Sphere here? What are we looking at?
What are we look?
If you look at one sphere, what are we looking at?
That's not a sphere. That's a line segment. We're looking at what are essentially plane waves moving this way, and they're broken up in one direction. Perhaps not unrelated to the little breaks in your Lisagang circles. Because I'm coming to. Okay, here, and actually this one I think is a movie. Get over there. Okay. Okay, here we have these dash waves coming along. This was originally a nice looking spiral, and then it starts to break up. into little segments. And then somewhat later, and get up there. Okay, and here is a pair of fully developed segmented spirals that do annihilate when they collide. Notice that structure, rather interesting. Well, I'm looking for biological examples of
So the reaction only takes place in the droplet.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the reaction diffuses through the membrane to the other droplet.
Some do, but it's essentially like Ray's system in that the stuff that diffuses into the oil doesn't have anything to react with.
I understand, but it has to. It's not even for a pattern. The other regions have to move around.
Yeah.
But they only react with the droplet.
Yeah. Okay, so interesting features. If you calculate the average concentration in a droplet, what you find is that for something like sulfuric acid, which is present at 1 molar, you got about 300 molecules in a droplet. But for something that's present at 1 millimolar concentration, like the catalyst, there's basically a molecule in every 3 droplets. So, you know, and if you think about having 10 to the 17 of these, you'd almost like to have a sort of statistical mechanics that deals with systems in which there are lots of identical systems, each of which has very big fluctuations within it. Maybe it already exists, but I don't know about it. Okay, we do have a model. This is basically the ordinary Argonator model for the reaction, and then we basically just add reactions for things going out of the droplets and into the oil and back. And you can either have the activator or the inhibitor doing that. And if you do some simple calculations with partition coefficients that are known, you find that depending on the oil to water ratio, under some conditions, it's mostly activator that's diffusing through the oil, and under other conditions, it's mostly inhibitor, which accounts for how you get from, say, Turing patterns to accelerating waves. Okay, so you can tune the microstructure by varying the water to surfactant and water to oil ratios, chemistries in the water droplets, nonpolar species diffuse through the oil, 2 different diffusion rates, and this initial bimodal distribution of droplet sizes, which I haven't said anything about lately, yet. How much time do I have?
10 minutes.
Okay. There are several mechanisms for getting localized patterns, which is something I want to say a little bit about because we've been focusing a lot on that lately. If you have a periodically forced reaction diffusion system, you can get localized structures. By localized structures, what I mean, imagine having a system which is steady state in most of the system. You have a narrow area in which it's oscillating, an oscillon. But you could have oscillations in one region and faster oscillations in another, or something along those lines. Bistability is certainly one way you could get that, but then the front that separates the two behaviors needs to have zero velocity, which is not always so easy to achieve. There's periodic forcing. Global negative feedback, which I'll show you, and coupled layers, which I'll say something about. Yeah?
If you took the same experiment and did it in the regular gel, what would you get? Normal spirals?
You get normal outwardly moving BZ spirals. You get target patterns if you don't have too many defects. You can get plane waves, but you don't get any of this other fancy stuff.
But you get what you get in water.
Yeah. Okay. Global feedback. Basically, you take some quantity in a spatially extended system, and you do some kind of integral or average, and you use that as a control on the system. So instead of having, in a zero-dimensional system, the value of some quantity feeds back and determines how the system behaves. We have a spatially extended system, but we're going to take an average over the whole system. Again, you don't need the references. One of the things you get are localized clusters. Okay, here's the experimental system. Basically, what we do is we shine light through the system. We measure how much is in the oxidized state. We average it over the whole volume, and then we use that to control the light intensity in this photochemically active system. And what we get are localized patterns where it's oscillating here and here, but not here. And you can see that in this space-time plot, it's oscillating in this region, but not in this region. And this is a periodic local structure. This is an aperiodic local structure. I think I have a movie.
Was that the whole sample? Or
that was the whole sample. Yeah, this is the whole sample. Now here, we have a movie of one of these things. Get over there. Okay, so it's something happens here, and then something's going to happen here, I think. Okay, and this region is quiescent, and this will happen again here, and then again here. Whether this is related to the E. coli, where it oscillates here, and doesn't oscillate in the middle, is somewhat speculative. It'll do it again, but that's all right. We can model this, but okay. Yeah, let me just say something about a couple layers. I got 5 minutes. Okay, we can do a couple layers in 5 minutes. Okay, the reason that I think global feedback is somewhat related is that you can think of the oil bath as providing a sort of averaging of the local concentrations of nonpolar species produced and providing a sort of communication with all the droplets that are swimming in the bath. There's another way of thinking about this. Remember the bimodal distribution of droplet sizes. You can think of that since at these scales, reaction rates actually depend on the size of these compartments as having essentially two systems. One, the small droplets, one, the large droplets, that are coupled through this non-reactive oil layer. Another way you could do something like that would be to have two layers coupled through a membrane where no reaction went on in the membrane. It just provided transport of, say, one species between this layer and this layer. And you could have different constraints in the two different layers. You could feed them with different concentrations, or you could shine light on one. And you have this layer in between. So here's a reaction layer, here's a reaction layer, and then one of the species, but not both, diffuses between the layers. And you can write out the equations, and we've done this with the origonator model for the BZ reaction. We've done it with the Brusselator. We've done it with a few other toy models. And you get some interesting patterns. This is a super lattice pattern. Come on, a little more. There we go. This is a set of interlaced hexagonal lattices that oscillate periodically 120 degrees out of phase with one another. And the guy on the bottom is another one. This is a simulation. Yeah, the experiments aren't as pretty as the simulations. And this one is a similar pattern. One of these is the origonator, one of these is the Brusselator. Don't remember which. So that's one kind of example.
In one of the layers?
That was in one layer. This one is actually summed over the two layers. And initially we had random conditions. And what happens is you get anti-phase patterns in the two layers, but at the border, in each pattern you've got essentially a black region and a white region, but it's black on the bottom, white on the top, they average together, but the boundaries between the fronts, there's some kind of transverse instability, and they wiggle with a characteristic wavelength that doesn't average out when you sum the two layers. And then there are all sorts of other combinations. A stands for asymmetric, S stands for symmetric, and you can get Turing in one region and steady state in another. I will try to leave time for discussion. So global coupling leads to localized clusters. There's some evidence for a canard mechanism where small amplitude oscillation suddenly jumps to large. Coupling between layers can generate interesting structure. Microemulsions are nice. And I think that's the end.
Thank you. Really wonderful. I just coming from looking at biological system, it seemed to me a step between, say, abiotic or non-living towards the living, because you introduce some element, at least one element of this concentration of some of the reaction, which is very nice. And I wanted to ask you an experimental question. Can you use the advantage of having such a system and attach, for example, a fluorescent molecule to each of the droplet and then see the concentration?
We have thought about it, and it would be very nice to be able to get resolution at the droplet level, or even at the 1,000 droplet level.
They form structure which is compatible with the structure of the reaction.
There is a fluorescent version of the surfactant that is in the literature. I need to find a synthetic organic chemist to make it for me. Because
it would be so nice, because then you can see really if there is a coupling between the two levels, the internal level. And I know that there are Koppelman,
no.
Maybe you know that express molecules that are expressed in the presence of some chemicals, then it gets. You say no.
Maybe you two want to.
I didn't say no.
Yeah, no,
you can even have a measure. For example, maybe there is no structure in their density, but there is a structure of those that are active and non-active.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, our resolution is very crude, and I think there are likely to be much smaller scale structures, maybe just in the density, but perhaps also in the concentration that we can't see. Yeah, well, there isn't as much interest in making fluorescent proteins for the BZ reaction as there is for living systems.
Well, the reason I say no is because I still believe in this reaction that the droplets are fully mixed, and that the pattern we are seeing, I don't think they have to do much with organization of the droplet. But I would like to go back to the osmotic pressure and the idea that the oil is providing a global feedback effectively, which is really dramatically going to change the pattern formation. But how can you get it in terms of time scale? It's not going to be through any kind of diffusive or even the advective process. That you're going to get a global feedback. However, a very, very efficient mean is the osmotic pressure. The chemical reaction is only taking place in each water droplet. Mm-hmm. And as the concentration changes, the osmotic pressure is going to change. And actually, it's going to be the fraction of droplets which are in a certain state. The osmotic pressure is, instant communication, is taking the average of that. So it's actually acting as a global feedback. So I would suggest that a way to test that is actually to apply pressure to your system.
Well, that
externally.
That we could certainly try.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
I would like just to make a comment about this oscillating hexagons with 120 degrees out of phase. That about 7 years ago we described this kind of dynamics from Kuramoto-Sivashinsky equations, and we described it analytically by analogy of electrons in solids analytically. So I would be glad to continue discussion on this point.
I'd be interested. Yeah, I think in solid state physics, the superlattices are.
But oscillations like this.
Because we're actually looking for experimental examples of this now.
Experimental question. The surfaces you use just glass, do you have to treat your glass, or does the surfactant just go in the glass and covers the whole glass layer?
Yeah. It spreads quite.
So it spreads, so you don't see any demixing or anything. How do you know you have these droplets inside, other than by other people's experiments?
We do the light scattering experiment.
You do actually the light scattering experiment and know what the droplet size is?
Yeah.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, and it is time dependent, there's no doubt. But
it's time dependent.
Yes. Well, I showed you 4 hours and 24 hours, the distributions are quite different.
Is it possible?
The patterns are different. We cannot get some of these patterns in old microemulsions because we need the bimodal distribution in order to get some of these patterns. In particular, the dash waves, and the segmented spirals. Those only come in fresh, that is, bimodal microemulsions.
Okay. I'm biased to ask it because there are many chemists here. But I understand that chemists have their own tricks, and they can add some target particles or markers. And markers
why
to the solution.
No,
what I mean is they can add markers and then measure, for example, the effective zeta potential in the solution. And if there is really some kind of effects like this and communication between the droplets and they change their density, you should see variations or changes or even oscillation in the zeta potential. Is it right?
I think in principle, yeah, I'm not sure. John's nodding. Maybe you have a better sense than I do of how practical that would.
Well, I don't know. I don't like to stick an electrode into oil, but it doesn't hurt. You just lose an electrode.
Yeah.
But it has also water, right?
No. I mean, you could do it. I mean, it'll also create a significant perturbation.
I guess it would be interesting to stick two platinum electrodes.
Yeah, we could certainly do that, two platinum micro electrodes.
Do you think that these localized patterns could be thought of as envelope solitons, you know, where the amplitude of the oscillation follows this that solitonic shape?
We've thought about solitons in these systems, I mean, also in these waves that sort of bounce off at right angles. Maybe. I don't know what happens. These localized patterns don't move around, so I don't know what would happen if you bounced a couple off them, but it may be a useful way to think.
And do you...
There's an interesting effect of history, because for the last 30 years, people have talked about solitons in chemistry. And said yes and no, but never found it. So naturally, you know, you sort of react negatively. There's no question. It comes from the past.
Yeah, but it might be a useful.
Do you see those localized patterns only when you have this global feedback, or do you see it?
We have global feedback here. Yeah, that's one way to look at it. Yeah, well, you don't see these patterns in the ordinary BZ reaction.
Right. And could you repeat perhaps one more time what the feedback mechanism actually is, and whether you can change the sign of it, perhaps even?
Yes, you can change the sign of it by changing the oil to water ratio, because the feedback is essentially oscillating reaction happens, produces byproducts which are either acceleratory or inhibitory and go out into the oil, get well mixed in the oil, and then go back into other droplets. By changing the oil to water ratio, you can change whether it's the acceleratory or inhibitory species present in greater concentration in the oil. So in that sense, you can change the sign of the feedback. Yeah, this is a very tunable system.
Can you change the pattern you're working with?
Yeah, oh, and then the I showed you that phase diagram. I went through it too quickly, but you get all sorts of different patterns depending on how you vary the chemistry and how you vary the droplet fraction.
So regarding the small, tiny spirals or some broken waves along your spiral waves, big ones, I remember there was a study long time ago studying the effects of isothermal, the temperature effect, temperature gradient effect to the wave propagation. And we've seen some, they've been discussing the wave breakup in relation to that. And do you think, is it not relevant at all here?
Say more about the experiment.
I don't remember exactly, but there was a study about 20 years ago relating this temperature gradient effect. Really some sort of convections involved in.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think we have convection here, but I think certainly gradients and temperature can provide a global feedback. I mean, more so in solid state reactions where you've got heat produced and the temperature provides a sort of global feedback bath in the same way. It's not. Oh, in vertical gradients, but I can make it.
I'm trying to. The way I'm understanding this, you have a micellar system with the reactants. And there's a artificially slow time scale set by the diffusion, the diffusive communication between them.
Yep.
And is it true that the reactions within a single micelle are quite fast? So would it be right to think about it as number of catalysts per micelle sort of independent of the volume because it's so well mixed on the time scale of this diffusive communication?
I mean, that's certainly, in effect, what we do when we model it.
Okay, because
I don't know whether that's really true and whether there are things that happen that aren't in our models.
So the follow-up is, when you showed your distribution, it looked like you had, for the larger drops, you'd have about two catalysts, double the size, 8 × 1/3, you get about 2.
Yeah.
And now, when the system ages, it looks like it's going down to small drops. What happens if it's aging by merging, you'd expect 3-4 catalysts in a drop, but are they plating out on the surface?
No, I don't think they're plating out on the surface. I mean, I think the answer is we don't know at all what the micro effects, the stochastic effects of having very small numbers of catalyst molecules per drop are, and whether we can get away with a mean field treatment of the catalyst. What I'd really like to be able to do is some kind of treatment that takes that into account, even in a toy model.
So do you have a sense of if there's any non-trivial dynamics in a single micelle with different numbers? Like, at what stage do you start recovering bulk patterns?
We don't have any idea. I mean, the only thing I can say is when there's zero catalyst molecules, then I know something different. But I don't know whether there's a difference between 1 and 2 and, 10 to the 6.
Oh, that you know. That's the square root of n.
Well, I know about the fluctuations, but I don't know about the average dynamic.
The actual spiral wave.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
Will that probably outward keeping those gashes? But keeping an intact wave front?
The dashes grow as the thing goes outward, and when they reach a critical size, they split into two. So
I was going to say, in a normal medium, if you had 35 little wave breaks, you'd soon have 35 little spiral waves.
Yes, exactly, but that doesn't happen.
Huh.
And we think that there's actually a sort of Turing-like bifurcation along that direction, and in the models, there is a Turing instability along with an excitable steady state.
Just a question about the size distribution of the little droplets. You showed that you start out with some big ones and some little ones, and you end up with mostly little ones. And yeah. Andrew said getting smaller by merging. Of course, when things merge, they get bigger.
Well, I mean, clearly the big guys have to break up.
Yeah, they have to break up.
The ones you end up with are smaller than the big ones and a little bigger than the small ones.
But you must have some breakup.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they got to go somewhere.
Why would they do that?
They collide.
They collide and they merge.
Yeah.
They get bigger.
No. Maybe they collide and they break. But
I don't understand.
The big ones come from the initial mixing process, so they may be inherently unstable.
So they'll bifurcate.
Yeah, but fortunately for us, they break up over a time scale which is slow compared with the chemical reaction.